When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is The Stage Right Side with James Whiteside, where we'll dive deep into the dark world of dance and come up on the bright side. We have Skylar Brandt, ABT principal dancer, and my friend here on The Stage Right Side. Hi, Sky.
Hi.
So we are actually not in my dressing room right now. This is The Stage Right Side with James Whiteside is a lie. We are not in my dressing room. I repeat, we are in Icon, mother, legendary legend, Jillian Murphy's dressing room. Did I ask her? No. But I broke it. My dressing room is full of men. Aaron and Calvin are my dressing roommates, and they're in there, and I feel bad kicking them out to do a podcast. You know what I mean? It's just common courtesy. So what I did instead was break into the primas, to the reigning primas dressing room, which is totally fine.
Perfect. She'd love that we were in here.
I hope so. I hope so. It's really clean. She's really organized. It is unsurprising.
Yeah.
She has very little things. Yeah. Also, when you've been a principal for this long, as long as Jillian has, you get your own dressing room. She has her own space, her own chaise lounge, own room. It's really pretty amazing. And the rest of us are slumming it with, you know, 17 roommates. But sometimes it's lonely, right?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy having roommates personally.
Me too, otherwise I get sad.
Yeah, you're social, I'm social.
Yeah, because the more time I'm alone, the sadder I get, and I just become depressy ballerina.
Into yourself.
Yeah, Bella calls it depressy ballerina.
I love that.
It's really good. Okay, how you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
I am good, I just got off stage. I just did a As Time Permits, which is an iconic ABT phrase, As Time Permits, which means they do a whole run-through on stage, and then if they finish with enough time, another couple gets to do a pas de deux. So I just got to do maybe 1/3 of my Act 4 pas de deux in costume on stage. And it's really fun when they stop it, like, right in the middle of your pas de deux, and they're like, that's time! And I'm like, well, but that's fine. I'm here on the stage right side where everything is beautiful. I want to talk about Onegin, which was the first week of performances here at the Met. This is season 6 of The Stage Right Side, and I have talked to a lot of dancers and people within the organization, but we have never done this together, have we?
Yeah, I know. I feel very honored to be on the podcast right now.
You are my first guest of season 6. And I was like, this is crazy. We need to remedy this. So here we are. But I was really hoping to do this during Onegin week, but it was crazy. It's been crazy.
Yeah.
So I want to go back in time and talk to you about Onegin, because you actually did the role of Olga, well, like, you were 20 or something, right? Or how old were you?
Yeah, I mean, no, it was probably, when was the last time we did Onegin? Like, 6 years ago, 7 years ago?
Okay, so like, you were,
yeah, it was early 20s, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't begin to ask your age. Yes. I would never.
I'm 31.
Okay, fierce.
As of this recording.
Oh my gosh, I'm okay, you really want to go there? It's July 1st today, this very day, and my birthday is on July 27th. Guess how old I'm turning? You know.
Are you turning 39?
No.
Are you turning 40?
Yup.
Oh!
I know.
That's so exciting,
though. It is exciting. I don't feel badly about it yet, but I might soon, so stay tuned.
Well, that'll be the next episode.
Okay. So,
Depressy ballerina.
Depressy ballerina's back and 40. So, Onegin, we've both have done this ballet quite a bit, actually, in various capacities, but you were reprising your role as Olga. So the role of Olga is a youthful sort of, for lack of a better word, sort of like ditzy type. And as an adult, you are a fully formed adult at this point. How does that feel to sort of inhabit that character?
It's really interesting you mention that because in one of my first rehearsals with Reed Anderson, who is responsible for the rights to Onegin. I don't know if you want to explain how that works.
Yeah,
with
sure.
Choreographers and trusts and things.
There's a Cranko trust. John Cranko choreographed this fabulous ballet called Onegin, and Reed Anderson is the manager of the trust and also is heavily involved in coaching the principals and the core. So go on then.
So he, in his, you know, in one of our first rehearsals, he actually told me that I looked too much like Tatiana, which is the other role, Olga's sister, who's a little bit, I would say a little bit more reserved, a little bit more, like her head is always in the books, and she's definitely more cerebral, I think.
Yeah.
And, in a way, it felt like a really big compliment to me, of course, because it had shown that I had matured and grown. But he was like, you know, he said, it's not a bad thing that you look like Tatiana, he said, but you need to look like Olga.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of tap into my youthfulness again and sort of that joy. And as he explained it, it's almost like I have nothing between my ears.
So brutal.
Yeah. But, you know, I actually I've always loved working with Reed because he's direct and honest, and he doesn't really waste people's time. He just says it like it is, and I think a lot of people, understandably so, can feel really sensitive when they're working with somebody like that. But for me, it's perfect because, first of all, I love to laugh at myself, but also I think he's correct. So yeah. I take everything, you know, into consideration when I'm in the room with him. And so to come back as an older dancer and be reprising the role, I had to kind of maybe go back in time a little bit and apply those qualities that maybe I had the first time around.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to create a new character from something you've already done in a weird way. You're like really creating the character instead of just being yourself, which is a wonderful challenge for us at American Ballet Theater.
Yes.
Okay, lest you forget, public theater, we do that.
Emphasis on the theater.
On the theater.
Theater is spelled R-E.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. In British drags.
Yeah.
So for me, Onegin has been a sort of career-long journey. I started out in the Corps de Ballet in Onegin when I was in Boston Ballet. I was 18 years old. It was one of the first ballets I ever did, and I danced the old men, which is hilarious, putting an 18-year-old in a bald cap and telling them to, like, you know, hobble around in Act 2. I did the Act 1 men's dance and the ballroom couples and everything. I never did Lenski, but I have been doing Prince Gremin for the last couple of iterations. And I did that with, you know, Diana Vishneva and Alexandra Ferry. And so this time I got to play Onegin, which was a huge honor for me. It's a role I've desired for a long time, but sort of wrote off in a weird way. I was like, oh, I guess I'm just not that. I'll never do that. And it ended up being a really, really great experience for me. And I felt, talk about creating a character. It's not me at all. Like, the character, the way he acts toward people is very much not me. And I had so much fun playing a sort of incorrigible asshole, for lack of better words.
Yeah.
You know, he's a snob.
Yeah.
And he's pretty unlikable, even though he's charismatic, you know?
Yeah.
And that was really fun. And so Onegin is long gone now. We're on week 3 of the Met. We're about to start Swan Lake. However, I do want to also talk about Wolfworks. Tell me about your roles in Wolfworks.
Yeah, so I loved my roles in Wolfworks. I got to play the role of Sally in the first act. And the first act is loosely based on Mrs. Dalloway, the Virginia Woolf book. And Sally is kind of this free spirit woman who sleeps with men, sleeps with women. She's really progressive and like ahead of her time. And the truth is, I've always looked at male body roles and wanted to kind of do that and be that. And I think I have, I don't know if you can say that you have masculinity in you, if masculine, feminine is something that's even applicable. But like I felt like I got to be the side of myself that I never get to be in the classical ballets. Mm. So that was so much fun. I shared an onstage kiss with my partner, Feng Chi Lee, who played the younger version of Clarissa. And Clarissa, it was played by Hiso, and I also got to kiss Hiso, but it was really sweet because Feng Chi, it was her first onstage kiss. Mm. And it was with me, and I was like, this is so awesome. Yeah. And actually, we got a lot closer to each other in our friendship outside of the studio as a result of dancing this together. And then in the second act, which is called Becomings, and it's based on the book Orlando, it's very abstract. It's like, you feel like you're looking into outer space, and it's like really super galactic, and there are lasers and kind of crazy music, and it's definitely a crowd pleaser. And I think my part was my favorite of anyone's. Like, mm-hmm. if I had to choose, I would choose my part. So I feel lucky that I got mm-hmm. to do it, because I have one particular solo that it's like off kilter. I'm supposed to be kind of like falling into a black hole type thing, but I get to be really weird all at the same time, and it works. And I love to be weird, and that's also something I can't be on stage all the time when I'm playing a swan, for example. Yeah. So I loved it.
Yeah. So Wayne McGregor is a British choreographer, and he made this three-act ballet based on the life and works of Virginia Woolf. And it is one of the most fascinating spectacles we've had the luxury of performing here at American Ballet Theatre. And it also makes use of the theatre in us. And Act 1 and 3 are particularly theatrical in their storytelling. And Act 2 is abstract and stimulating and mesmerizing. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we get to bring it back for next Met season. Because if you haven't seen it yet, I really beseech you to get tickets to this production if it comes back next year. I want to talk about something sort of sensitive here.
Yes.
Did you read the review in the, I shan't mention its name?
I actually didn't read it, but I did hear about it, that it was not so favorable.
It was scathing. It was okay. Pan. It was a complete pan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to mention the publication's name so they don't get ad clicks or whatever, you know? I'm so petty. I'm so petty, but it felt almost irresponsible in its savagery.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting is I heard that there, in the comment section on the publication, people were writing, did we even see the same ballet? Mm-hmm. This feels like, it feels like ABT can never get a good review from you.
We can't.
You know, and it was like people were so kind of outraged by what was written, because mm-hmm. I think the public experienced a very different
Clearly. Yeah. Every time I watched a lot of the shows, I was only in one performance that week, and I watched a lot of the shows because I adore watching this production. There's so much to see beyond just face value, and the audience went mad for it every single show, even on a Wednesday matinee. It was like the old Blue Hairs were just living for it. It was so fun to watch and to listen. That really frustrates me. And I make a habit of not reading my own reviews, but I knew I wouldn't be in the review because I wasn't in opening night.
Right. Same,
so
yeah.
I was really curious, and I was rooted. It's like, you know that Tyra Banks clip? We were all rooted for you.
Yes.
I felt very that.
Yeah.
I was very Tyra in this moment.
Yes.
And it really made me angry. And I do feel like ABT in general has not gotten a good review in years and years and years. And I don't understand why. I feel like the dancers are incredible. We're doing exciting things. We do the classics really, really well, yeah. I might add.
Right.
And I feel really defensive and angry.
Yeah. And like, here it is, we're doing something that's actually very innovative and mm-hmm. different for our repertoire, and it still didn't land. But thank God that thank God people still came. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think word of mouth obviously made it so that we had really full houses, mm-hmm. Show after show. And it's not of, you know, the old times of Broadway where it's like one bad review can shut down a whole production.
That's true. Yeah, I just think about ticket sales and think about future opportunities for American Ballet Theatre, and a critics' pick stamp on a show like Wolfworks could do a lot for us. It could fund future productions. It could bring in ballets that we haven't done that we should be doing, like Meyerling, like, you know, all those Ashton classics like La Femelle Gardée, which those productions cost a lot of money, you know. Mm-hmm. I want to do those things, and they cost money, and there's a limited pool of high roller donors, so we need to be selling tickets. And while our ticket sales are excellent this year when compared with previous, you know, the last couple of years post-COVID, it would just be really nice to get those good reviews
extra
so the
help.
Butts get in the seats.
Yeah.
All right, that's the end of my diatribe. All right, it's week 3. What are we doing?
Swan Lake.
Okay, I don't know. I was in physical therapy earlier, and Jillian Murphy, icon, legend, mother, was on the table next to me, and we were discussing the story. I want to hear your thoughts on your character, and I want to hear your thoughts on my character.
Mm-hmm. Well, I should say that in general, I hate Swan Lake.
Okay, there it is.
Actually, I never really, I don't think I appreciated it growing up, even as an aspiring ballerina. Yeah. My favorite ballets were like Corsair and Don Q and Romeo and Juliet. And Swan Lake just, I mean, aside from third act, which, you know, some people buy tickets just to see the third act and they only come for third act and then they leave after third act. For me, it just feels so, like, melodramatic. And I think, I mean, it's a role I never aspired to be Odette O'Deal. And meanwhile, it's probably one of the most coveted and respected and iconic roles for a female ballerina. It's, like, the role. And it feels weird to be in something that I don't envision myself in whatsoever. I don't think I have the lines, the body, the interpretation. I don't connect to my character. I can't even say that I love the music, because I've struggled with this ever since I debuted it. You know, I just, there was nothing for me to cling on to that was inspiring me or motivating me to perform. And people would say, well, you know, in the pas de deux, just listen to the music. And I'm like, I don't like the music. I think it's whiny, you know? So for me, I can't even, there's like literally nothing.
Oh my God.
There's nothing for me to really get, you know, get on board with. And also because Swan Lake is so aesthetically like unforgiving.
Yes.
You know, and again, my body's not the type, like, I don't have the most arched feet and the highest extensions and the most, you know, whatever, legs, and my arms are not, like, double jointed, so even just, like, raising my arms in a swan position or trying to flap is, like, takes an unbelievable amount of muscle involvement to both keep my shoulders down but my arms long.
Yeah.
Like, it just, I feel, like, suffocated when I'm dancing it. You know, it's just hard to know, to find the humanity and the story in it, because I'm like, well, is she a woman or is she a swan? And how much do I play animal? How much do I play human? Mm. You know, and the whole story just feels silly anyway, to be honest. I mean, I feel like I've talked to a lot of the men who play Siegfried, and they're like, we feel stupid. Like, how can we not tell the difference between a black and a white swan? Or, you know, it's a little hard to take it seriously, I would say.
I mean, Kevin, our previous director, Kevin McKenzie, had solved, in a way, that conundrum of not recognizing that the white swan and the black swan are two different creatures, saying that, oh, he knows. He knows it's a different person, but he reminds her of Odette, the white swan, and he is a horny teenager.
Yeah, like it's okay for him.
It's okay for him to, like, betray.
Be with the black swan,
Yes. And that sort of kills the whole story, which is what Jillian and I were talking about, because the theme, for me at least, is finding true love as opposed to just adhering to duty and getting it done.
Yeah.
And the whole, you know, true love can save you, can break your curse, can make you happy kind of deal is really sweet and relatable, even though it might not exist. It's idealistic. It's a fairy tale. But I feel like poor Siegfried just, like, thinking, well, I guess I'll be with this one now. Sort of kills the vibe.
Yeah, well, it also makes you look like a sleazebag in a way.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't. Maybe you want more depth to you than that.
Yeah, it's really tough for me personally because I find this story to be super... Okay, we're shitting on Swan Lake. I want to back up for a second and say Swan Lake is synonymous with classical ballet. The reason people know what classical ballet is because of Swan Lake and because of the Nutcracker.
Yeah.
Thank you to Swan Lake. Thank you to the Nutcracker. You're paying our bills. We appreciate that. However, my character is a literal pancake. He's oppressed by his duty. and for art to really resonate for me, it needs to be relatable on a sort of mass scale. And here you have this princeling who is like, wah, 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 I don't want to get married. And I just don't know why I would care for him.
Right. Yeah. Even character development wise, like I feel that as the White Swan, for example, you know, she's sad by the curse that's on her, but then she's also like hopeful and, you know, but it's very hard to portray those things. And, you know, when it doesn't necessarily build from anything, it's like just right away, oh, this is the sad act, and then act three is like the exciting act, the seductive act, and then we go back to act four, which is again like the oh, you broke my heart act. And also as a dancer, like because it's an aesthetic art form, we have to be really careful about what our faces look like. And so if I go out on stage and for 45 minutes of act two just furrow my brows and look like, oh, this is what this, you know, seems like it should look like, what I'm feeling. I mean, it's not attractive either. So how then do you tell the story if you can't use your face in that way? You know, it's not the same as actors and actresses who have close-ups of their faces and can have a lot more subtlety. Like, it
and
still
lines.
Has... And lines, yes. It's like we have to project with our bodies, and that's also why it's hard for me because I'm like, my body doesn't naturally make those shapes either. So it's like I'm working like four times harder than other people just to make the shapes look nice, and then on top of it, trying to like tell a story at the same time that feels not like it doesn't have a lot of dimension to it.
Yeah, I feel at many points in Swan Lake, it's beauty for beauty's sake. Which, there's value in this. Beauty is fierce and iconic, and I love it. Especially as a gay man, beauty is king. But I disagree also with your statement about having your physicality not be able to tell the story. I think body language is more than the way you look.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or more than your sort of God-given aesthetic. It is about, you know, a subtle lean into your partner or a tilt of the head or like a shrug or whatever it is. It's not always the arabesque that's telling the story.
Right.
And it's not always the face, especially in ballet. And I think for that storytelling to read from the audience at the Met Opera, which is gigantic, it's all about body language and imbuing the dance with the sort of like natural human body language, which is really hard in a ballet like Swan Lake, which is hyper-classical. So much easier in Romeo and Juliet and things like Onegin even.
Right.
Which are, like, modern by comparison.
Yeah. I think it's that Swan Lake, you can't hide. Like, it's you're in a tutu and tights, and there's so much control involved. It's like the steps, you know, we might not realize it as a general audience, but it takes a lot of balance and control. And so when you're worrying about those things, it can also take away from the freedom to express yourself. And so that balance of being able to be like, I need to let go, but also I need to not fall over is like really challenging.
Yeah. And 95% of my energy is going towards not falling over.
Yeah. Like saving things.
Yeah.
Which is such a common thing in performance, which again, the general public might not realize, but like we're saving things like 50% of the time.
You have to really think on the fly, actually.
Yeah.
So another thing that I like to pretend with my character for this ballet is that he is closeted. And he spends his whole first act being told that he needs to date women, be with women, when in fact he is chasing Benno around. And he's mad that Benno is flirting and, you know, doing all this stuff. This is not a sanctioned ABT interpretation, by the way. This is just something that I think about because it's more interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he runs out, you know, runs away, basically, and he finds this mythical creature in the woods, it's like the first time that he's found someone who he's attracted to who will love him back, you know? And I don't think it's so much about the gender of the swans as it is, you know, he's allowing himself to love and be loved, which just feels better for me.
I love that. You know, I think, aren't there other productions of Swan Lake that kind of, is it like Matthew Bourne's that tap into that same?
Yeah, there's a beautiful Matthew Bourne production of Swan Lake that started in the 90s or something, and I saw it when I was a teenager, and it really opened my eyes to the possibilities of queerness in theater and everything. Yeah, it's really beautiful.
It's
if you
gorgeous.
Haven't seen it, I'm sure there's like a DVD or it exists online somewhere. Check it out. Matthew Bourne's Swan Lake. Gorgeous.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices. All in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5. Then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh my gosh. Well, that has taken us to week 3. I want to know what you're doing at home to rest. Like, are you watching any shows? Mm. Are you reading a book? What's going on?
Yes. I am the person who will, like, fall asleep to cult documentaries and murder mysteries, and that, like, just lulls me right to bed. I have no nightmares, and I enjoy it. It's like, it'll be between, like, even a matinee or an evening, I'll run home to watch another cult episode, and I just eat it up. So
What have you really enjoyed? Which one? Which cult have you enjoyed?
So, well, this was interesting. I just watched a documentary called Six Schizophrenic Brothers. And mind you, I bring back all this information for the wigs and makeup room because just love to hear all of the messed up things that I enjoy watching and listening to. And that's actually crazy because I think there were like 12 kids and 6 of them were schizophrenic. So that was really fascinating. And then I also finished a documentary called Tell Them You Love Me, and it's a story of essentially a professor who falls in love with a guy with cerebral palsy. And whoa. I guess I shouldn't say more because maybe somebody will want to watch it. No spoilers. But also fascinating ethical question and kind of unfolds in its own way. And then I'm currently watching another messed up docuseries called The Keepers, and it's about like rape in the Catholic Church.
Gee whiz.
So
just some light viewing. Yeah. Oh my goodness. We're different.
What are you reading and watching?
I'm reading, so it's July 1st, so last month was Pride Month, and I decided to read only gay books. So I've read so many, and the one I'm currently reading that I haven't finished yet, it's called Hush, and it's about a judge in D.C. and a, like, I don't even know what they're called, like Inspector Gadget. No, I'm kidding. It's like an inspector who protects the judges, and it's like, you know, whatever. And there's this high-profile case that they get assigned together, and they fall for each other, but he's not allowed to come out because he's, like, the presiding judge on this, like, huge, huge world stage kind of trial. And I'm really enjoying it. It's a mix of intrigue, violence, politics, strategy, and gay sex.
Well, another thing that I can highly recommend and that I've already told you to read is the book All Fours by Miranda July, which is probably one of my favorite pieces of writing. And I just, it's really entertaining.
What is it about? Tell me.
It's essentially about a married woman with a kid. She's probably in her, like, 40s, and she plans to take a cross-country trip, but instead of taking a cross-country trip, she checks into a motel about, like, 10 miles away from her house. And that's where, and it takes off from there.
It sounds like an episode of Family Guy or something, like Brian and Stewie, like, veer off the I-95 and end up in Milford.
Yep.
Sign me up. And I'm watching right now The House of the Dragon. Are you watching this at all? Okay, I love fantasy. I love science fiction. Like, as far as books go, that's my genre, sci-fi and fantasy. So, House of the Dragon, I never watched. And season 2 just came out. And I was like, okay, I can't believe I didn't watch season 1. So, whatever, 2 weeks ago, I started season 1. And I loved it. I love all of the politics. I love the costumes. Can we talk about those wigs? Those wigs are the best wigs I've seen on TV. They are so impressive.
Wow.
And wigs are really hard to make. Yeah. I watched the wigs and makeup upstairs, stringing hair by hair into these nets and things.
It's insane. Especially for TV, where, like, you really can't see the wig part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really impressive. Props to the wigs. I'm really enjoying it. I always wish there was more gay stuff, but there never is.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is something gay happening, somebody dies or gets exiled, or it's like,
it's
okay,
quick.
Yeah. Or if there's like a bisexual person, they always choose the, like, you know, the woman.
The hetero, relationship.
But it's fine. Okay, what do you do after a show when you go home?
I'm up for hours. I tend to be up for hours, even if I finish, let's say, Swan Lake, and it's something that was really stressful and really hard and really physically demanding, you know, and the show might let out at like 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. I could be up till 2 or 3 in the morning just because the adrenaline is still
kicking.
So it's like I try to wind down by watching something, but I'm often just, like, wired and awake.
Yeah. Wait, I want to go back to Swan Lake for a second.
Yeah.
Because you seem to have a bit of a chip on your shoulder regarding Swan Lake.
Yeah.
And I have watched you do Swan Lake for years now. You've done it for, like, you did it before COVID, right?
Yes, I did it during COVID. I made my debut during COVID with a school in Florida.
Okay, so you've been doing it for years now. I've seen you do it for years. I think you're a gorgeous swan queen.
Thanks.
And I think you ought to be a little kinder to yourself.
Thanks.
And accept your swan.
I know. I'm trying to. And I think it's just my standards are so high in general, and I apply those standards to myself that I'm like, I should not be doing, like, I feel like I'm not a swan, like the ideal swan.
Do we always have to feel exactly right for every role? I don't think so.
Not necessarily, but I feel like if it's maybe between me and somebody else, like somebody else is more perhaps fitting or deserving of doing something like Swan Lake. Again, it's such a coveted role and it's so important. And I also respect like the art of classical ballet so much that it feels like it goes beyond me. And it's interesting because I've had this conversation like multiple times. Every year Swan Lake rolls around, I talk to somebody about how I really don't enjoy it because I don't feel like I fit the role. And I have had friends.
Hey, Jill. Hi. Oh, my God. Jillian Murphy's here. I'm sorry we broke into your room. Wait, hold on. Let me pause. Not us kicking Jillian Murphy out of her own dressing room. Oh, my God, I hate it here. Why are we like this?
She's so cool, though.
She's so cool. She was
so
gracious.
Yes.
She smells like Tiger Balm.
Yep. But, yeah, so anyway, you know, a friend of mine said, well, you know, there are, like, whatever, 3,000 people who want to watch you do Swan Lake. I was like, yeah, but I don't want to watch me do Swan Lake.
You don't have to.
I know, but in a way, I'm like, who's more important, them or me?
Both are important.
You know? So in a way, it's like this weird thing of, yes, maybe people can, you know, find happiness in watching me do Swan Lake, but am I feeling happy doing Swan Lake? That's debatable.
So this reminds me of something that Alessandra Ferri said to me. We were at 890 Broadway. She had just arrived, and she was starting her rehearsals for Wolfworks. And she had heard that I had blown out my knee a couple years ago. And so we were warming up for class in physical therapy, and she came up to me and she said, "How is your knee?" And I said, "Well, you know, it's doing really well, but it'll never be the same. Mm. It's really hard to jump. I feel like I've lost a lot of jump, and it's just difficult to accept that."
Yeah.
And she is an older ballerina at this point. She has had a really long, illustrious, amazing career. I respect and admire her. And she looked at me very plainly, and she said, "That doesn't matter. People who come to see you want to see where you are in your life, and you right now will mean something to somebody."
Mm.
So while you might not be who you were 10 years ago, you are giving somebody something of who you are now that they can relate to, and it will resonate with them. And it had me, got me really thinking about the connections I've made with people during my career. And a lot of the most meaningful conversations I've had with people have been after my knee injury, and the way that they can relate to my pain and perseverance throughout this whole thing.
Yeah.
And it made me feel so much kinder to myself. And she just said it, like, so cool. She was, like, laying down on the, like, Pilates reformer, just, like, spitting mad wisdom.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it just...
It made so much sense.
It made so much sense, and it also made me think about casting, about the roles I do, about the roles I do that I don't really like, about the roles that I wish I did.
Yeah.
And to the same point that your friend made, somebody came to see you be you in Swan Lake.
Right.
And in a way, that, like, sort of trumps your own feelings.
Yeah.
Because you're here, you got the part, you can give them you and accept you.
Right.
And that's really cool, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. And I receive a lot of, you know, thanks to social media and, like, the internet. It's like I can be on the direct receiving end of people's kindness and encouragement. But again, I think because of my own standard and how I see ballet, I'm like, yeah, but what, you know, if that person only saw this other person dance it, they'd probably never come back to my show.
But you already got your fans, honey. Okay. What is one role this season that you wish you were doing that you're not?
Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Juliet's a role that I've always aspired to dance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been skipped over for whatever reasons that I actually don't think were personal to me, but just, like, based on preference of our old director for other dancers, which is totally fine, and I've come to accept that. But that's a role that looks really fulfilling, and that I mean, I love that ballet. I love that music. I love that choreo. It's like the perfect ballet. So that's something I wish I could do.
All right, I'm putting that out into the universe. Romeo and Juliet, Skylar Brandt, Juliet, go. Manifesting. It's out there now.
It's out there.
It's out there. Okay, that's a great place to stop. Skylar Brandt, ABT principal dancer, and my friend, thank you so much for coming to the Stage Right Side.
Thank you for having me.
Where can all of my listeners follow you on the internet?
At Skylar Brandt, which is SKYLARB, as in boy, RANDT.
Skylar Brandt, at Skylar Brandt on Instagram. Do you have a TikTok?
I do. It's
do you
like
use that?
Sky Brandt or something. On occasion.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much. And tune in hopefully next week when I have another guest to be determined. Flying by the seat of my pants here in Jillian Murphy's dressing room at the Metropolitan Opera House. Do do buy my book if you haven't yet, Center Center. I'm always going to plug that. Sorry, but it's actually pretty good. So read it. And come see us dance at the Met Opera and beyond. Bye, love y'all.
Bye.
Make sure to follow me at James B. Whiteside on Instagram and TikTok. That's James B. Whiteside. And don't forget to click the link in my bio to purchase tickets for upcoming performances or to buy my book, Center Center, a funny, sexy, sad, almost memoir of a boy in ballet. Enjoy!
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app.
Get USDA Choice Bone-In Tender Ribeye Steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.